This episode is sponsored by Tunbridge Accountants. Are you a creative entrepreneur looking for financial support? Do you need clarity around your numbers or help with decisions related to your business finances? Do you even know what all the numbers mean? Before I worked with Tunbridge Accountants, I definitely didn't. Wendy and Lawton are not just accountants, they're your partners in navigating the complexities of business finance. They make VAT, corporation tax, cash flow management, all of this really simple, guiding you through all the decisions you need to make, whether that's a company purchase, setting up a new business, whether to register as a business. Wendy and Lawton can give you really honest, practical advice on everything. And by letting them take care of your business finances, it then frees you up to focus on what you do best, creating and selling your products. So thank you again to Tunbridge Accountants for sponsoring this podcast.
Welcome to the Bring Your Product Ideas to Life podcast. Practical advice and inspiration to help you create and sell your own physical products. Here's your host, Vicky Weinberg.
Hi, today I'm talking to Laura Seago from Footlit. Footlit makes LED backpacks that use tech to make you properly visible. Their smart light-up backpacks are ideal for kids walking to school, commuters, and in fact anyone who needs to be seen at night. In this episode, Laura explains the problem that she had and the product that she created to overcome it. I think many of us can probably relate to having a problem and thinking, I wish there was something out there. And Laura did just that. She actually created it. She tells us all about how she did that, all the people she involved. There were lots of teenagers that she spoke to find out exactly what they wanted from the product. And I think Laura's story is fascinating. Everything she's done, I think, is brilliant. She's did so much research. She just put so much into her products. And in fact, I'm going to stop talking now and let Laura tell you all about it. So hi, Laura. Thank you so much for being here.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's really good to talk to you.
So can we please start with you giving an introduction to yourself, your business and what you sell?
Yeah, no problem. So I launched Footlit this summer and we make LED backpacks that use technology to make you properly visible when you're out and about. So our backpacks light up with two strips of LEDs and they are ideal for kids walking to school, for commuters and anybody really who needs to be a bit more visible when they're out and about at nighttime or in low light conditions.
Well, thank you so much. And can you talk to us a bit about your inspiration for creating the Footlit, please?
Yeah, so it all started when my elder daughter started at secondary school. So she had to walk through the village to catch a bus to go off into town. We live in rural Warwickshire and our village is lovely, but we are basically little lanes, single track road, no pavement, no street lights. And very, very quickly after she'd started, of course, the clocks changed and I started to realise that she was pretty much invisible when she was walking. She's got a dark navy uniform on, she's got dark tights, dark shoes, you know, a dark coat. And as an adult, it's really obvious what you do in that scenario. You put on something luminous with lots of reflective strips on it, and you put a light on your back and you carry a torch and you make yourself as visible as possible. Well, I tell you what, when you're 11, 12, 13, that is the last thing you want to do. And the thought of actually having to wear something luminous, my daughter was like, I can't do that. I don't want to stand out. I just want to merge into the background. I'm a teenager. So I started to look at what there might be out there and sort of solutions that I could come up with. So I thought, well, okay, well, we've got lots of bike lights in the garage. Maybe I can attach a bike light to her bag. And that wasn't ideal. It was fiddly and it needed to be taken off during the day. Otherwise, it dropped off at school or it got broken. There are kind of backpack lights that you can get that attach. But again, they're great if you're an adult. But when you're 11, 12, 13 and you spend your time chucking your bag around, they get caught on things. They fall off. You know, 11-year-olds don't take care of things in the way that adults do. So I started to think, well, maybe I could find a bag that had got lights already in it. Well, there weren't that many out there. So that was where it really began, because I thought, well, maybe I could design something. Maybe I could come up with a solution to this problem, because I can't surely be the only mum or parent in the UK who is looking, thinking, I really want my child to have independence. I want them to be able to walk to school. This is important. But at the same time thinking, oh my word, this is really the first time she's been out without an adult with her. I'm reasonably confident in her road sense, but, you know, accidents happen. Kids get distracted. Kids do silly things and drivers get distracted. So maybe there's an opening here. So that was really the kind of the start of it.
Well, thank you. Thank you for sharing all of that. And I think you're right. I've seen some of the stats on road safety that you've shared on your Instagram, and they're actually really scary.
It's really frightening, isn't it? I looked at an Office for National Statistics report the other day, and this was from last year. So they said that 361 pedestrians were killed, 5,032 were seriously injured, and 11,261 had minor injuries. You know, that's a huge amount of people who are being injured, pedestrians being injured in road incidents. The real killers for me were things like the peak time for pedestrians to be killed or seriously injured was 3 p.m. till 6 p.m. prime time for walking home from school or walking home from work. 30% of fatalities take place on rural roads, and 13% of all accidents happen to those under 11. And I just thought, that's really scary. It's really scary. And obviously, you know, the onus is really on drivers. That, you know, the changes to the highway code make that really clear, that, you know, the drivers really need to take care of vulnerable pedestrians, vulnerable road users, cyclists, horse riders, etc. But again, the more I thought about it, the more you can do to make your child visible, the better.
Absolutely. Or yourself as well. I mean, I don't know if there are any statistics about time of year when more accidents happen, but I would bet that probably more do happen in that 3 to 6 window in the winter, like now when it's dark, because I've had a few incidents where I've been driving and then suddenly someone's there, because, you know, and often it's an adult, not a child, you know, they may be walking back from somewhere, but they've got a rucksack on and dark clothes and they haven't got any kind of lights.
Yeah.
And you don't honestly see them until you're, you know, if you're driving with your headlights, so you don't honestly see them until they're almost there. And it's really scary. And I think you're right that pedestrians do, I know it's definitely on drivers, but I think anything a pedestrian can do to make themselves more visible just makes sense, doesn't it?
Yeah, you're exactly right. My husband came home the other day and he'd been driving home from work and seen a lad who had sort of looked when he stepped out into the road, but didn't really clock what was coming, and walked out. And Richard said his heart was in his mouth thinking, oh my word, the driver's not going to see him. Because again, as you say, he was dark rucksack, dark school uniform. You know, the more you can be visible, the better.
Absolutely. And so when you look, so I know there are all sorts of, like you say, things, I've got wristbands that I, you know, I run to keep me visible. You can get lights and all kinds of things. But were there not at that time, did you find any backpacks that had lights included, or was there nothing out there?
Yeah, I found some, but again, there were quite a few aimed at cyclists, but they are very luminous. So they were kind of out from a teen style perspective. So that was the end of that. There were some that were kind of suitable. And so we had a look at those and kind of went through the kind of, do we like this one? Do we not? What don't we like about it? How bright actually are the lights? Because some of them have this stuff called EL wire in them. So EL wire is a type of wire that when you put a current through it from a battery, it will glow. And it's used quite a lot in things like dressing up costumes. I think they use it for a lot of cosplay type, you know, those fancy costumes. So we got ourselves a few strips of that in various different colours. And then we literally made a mock-up of what we wanted. And I made my poor husband walk up and down in the dark in the street outside with me measuring how far he could go before I lost sight of him or he really wasn't visible. And quite quickly did we realize that the bags with the EL wiring just weren't bright enough. They just didn't glow as clearly as we wanted them to. And they've also got, when they've got like a little battery pack attached to them, when the current goes through the wire, it actually makes a humming sound. So you can, it's just about audible enough to be really annoying. So I thought, right, that's out. We don't want that. So then we were down to the LED lights. So we sort of went through the same process again and then started to look at what did we like about the backpacks and what didn't we. which is where my lovely, lovely team of testers and parents came in. So I got together a little group of teens, and they probably ranged in age at that point. The eldest is 16 now, so they were probably about 13, 14, down to about 5 or 6, and started to talk to them about what did they like about their school bag? Why did they like the things that they did like? What was really annoying? What would be better? And in the whole process of no idea is a bad idea, wrote everything down, then discounted some of the more bizarre ideas, like, wouldn't it be really good if it had a massive speaker on the back and then you could play music really loudly? No, as a parent, no, that's not a good idea. But some of the things that they were really interested in were things that sort of were quite surprising. Actually, they took it really seriously. So water bottle pockets, you know, the usual topic of conversation, that suddenly became a really big issue. How deep should they be? Because actually, if they're not deep enough, it transpires when you chuck your bag on the floor in the corner of the classroom, your water bottle comes out. If they haven't got elastic around the top, if they're too loose at the top, when you go through doors, there's a danger that they get caught on the door handle and then get ripped off. So actually, the kids were really useful, giving us a kind of an insight into how they actually use their bag kind of day to day. What sort of a handle did they want on it? Did they just want a strap? Did they want a grab handle? Did they want a handle to hang it up? Where are they kept during the day? How big do they need to be? Because if it's got to fit in a locker, you can't have anything that's too enormous. And the parents were sort of useful as well. People saying things like, we want a key holder. It's got to have some method of keeping a house key safe. Because actually, if you're going to come home on the bus, or you're going to walk home and let yourself in, you know, several parents were saying the number of door keys we've been through because he keeps losing them, you know. So all that kind of input was really, really useful. I did get through a lot of bars of chocolate, though, bribing everyone for their input.
That's amazing. And I think that's so invaluable. I just actually recorded a podcast episode yesterday just by myself talking about this sort of research exactly and why it's just so important. Because yes, you could have sat down and asked your daughter, which I'm sure you did, but she's one person. And actually, the more people you can speak to and get input from, just the more rich and valuable that becomes.
Yeah, the better. And actually, parents had different views from kids, and the kids were quite open about actually what happened to their bags during the day. I mean, one of the things that I decided I was going to do fairly quickly was to make sure that there's a device sleeve in the bag. Well, the device sleeve is padded all the way around, including the bottom, because I watched one lad and he said, oh, look, you know, this, I like this because it's got a special sleeve that I can put my laptop in. And he demonstrated by picking his laptop up and dropping it into the sleeve. And there was an audible thud as it hit the ground at the bottom, and all the parents kind of winced and went, oh my word, that's awful. So that was an immediate thing. I was like, right, device sleeves need to be padded on the bottom as well. Because again, when you're a young teen, you don't pay that much attention to things. And yeah, you know that your laptop's valuable, but you've put it in your bag. So what, you know, so what if it went in with a bit of a clatter? So yeah, they were very helpful, all the kids.
And I think it is interesting, like you said, about talking to the parents as well, because I think their input's also valuable, because I'm assuming that parents are the ones paying for these school bags. You know, their kids are still at an age where this isn't something that they might be choosing it, but mum and dad has to endorse it because ultimately it's their money. So I think it was really sensible to get everyone's input.
Yeah.
And so at this stage, were you also showing them sort of other LED backpacks or light up backpacks that were on the market to get their views on those?
Yeah, so I took a whole load of samples, and I took a whole, you know, a lot of this stuff I don't have any experience of. So I've just kind of used my common sense. I printed out pictures that I got off the internet of all different styles of backpacks, different colorways, and, you know, different. Some of them had massive branding on them, some of them had small branding on them, some of them had thin straps, some of them had fat straps, you know. And we just sat and we talked through what do you like about these samples that I've got in front of me? Assess them for me, tell me what you think. Because actually, what, you know, I think as a mid-40s mother, is not what a 12-year-old boy thinks, you know, and I'm really conscious of that. So actually that was really useful, because they went, well, I don't like that color. And you think, well, okay, it's red. What's wrong with red? Oh, no, I don't want red. So you start to kind of refine what you do and don't want. Some of them were interested in kind of how the branding was portrayed on the bag. We talked about what was cool about cool brands, what wasn't cool. The youngest one, Tim, was absolutely delightful, and he kept telling me he really loved the colours green and blue, green and blue, green and blue, whilst pointing at a red and black sample. I really like that one. so some of it you kind of take with a pinch of salt. But actually the kids have been quite interested in the ongoing process as well of how you set up a business, because actually the kids who gave me all the advice are the models on the websites, you know, are kind of my kind of advice team. So it's been good for them as well to learn, you know, how do you go about setting up a business? What happens next to their advice? That, you know, what happened next was I found somebody in China who was able to help me translate my drawings and my kind of research into an actual sample. And then you could bring the sample back to the kids and to the parents and go, well, look, this is the sum total of what we came up with. What do we think now we can see it in reality?
That's brilliant. That was going to be my next question, actually, was what next? I think it's brilliant that you sort of, as you said, went into this never having set up a business before and just worked through the steps.
Yeah. So I talked to loads of people. I just talked to as many people as I could do. I talked to bag manufacturers in the UK. I talked to people who make kind of branded goods type agencies. I talked to them. I talked to backpack designers. I talked to electronic type engineer type people, designers, and people were really, really helpful, just gave me kind of loads of advice. And then found a guy in China who was able to translate my frankly quite dodgy drawings into something that he could work with. And one of the things that I was really, really keen on, the sort of key point for us, was that once you put the backpack on your back, you should be able to turn the lights on without taking the bag off. So a lot of the samples that were on the market, they had got switches for the lights, but the switches were inside a pocket or at the bottom of the bag, or, you know, just somewhere really inaccessible. And my thinking was, when you're 11 or 12 and you get off the bus and it's raining, the last thing you're going to do is faff about trying to put your hand in the bottom of the bag to find the little switch, or take your stuff out to get to the switch. It had got to be somewhere really accessible. So, you know, can you put the switch at the bottom of the straps, which is what we've done in the end. But that turned into quite an interesting kind of production issue. How do you go about putting strips of LEDs into the fabric of the bag in such a way that the switch is somewhere that's accessible? And even more than accessible, just to be turned on and off, you can actually get to it so that you can change the batteries when you need to.
So the contact you found in China, is he a bag manufacturer?
He is. Yeah, he's actually a guy. He's from Halifax in the UK, who's moved out to China. Since I first dealt with him, he's now moved his operations to Malaysia. But he works with various different small, and I'm talking really small, family-run businesses in China. So they are very small factories that are making small runs of things. Because obviously you can go to Alibaba and you can kind of find manufacturers that way. But this way I'd got this chap, his name's Rick, and he's been utterly fantastic in helping to translate what was quite an amorphous idea into something that is a physical product. So we worked through various different samples. So we had a kind of an initial sample, which was, as we suspected, kind of way off. Refined that into a second sample where we thought, yeah, this is getting there. Right, what we need to do now is we need to tweak how the reflective panels are attached, because actually there are three kind of triangular reflective panels on the front, which add to the visibility of the bag. how do you attach those in such a way that we were happy with them? Were we happy with the switches? Could we tweak the way that that worked and the structure of the bag? And sort of we kind of refined it and refined it until we got to the kind of final production sample where we were like, yeah, we're all systems go. But all of this was happening at the same time as COVID was happening, which made for a really bumpy ride in some ways. So it took way longer than perhaps it might have done in ordinary times to get to a point where we got a production sample and we could get on with actually manufacturing the run. And by the time we got to, I don't know, probably Christmas last year, we had been through several rounds of, we're all systems go. No, there's COVID in the factory. The factory's been shut down. Yeah, we're all systems go. No, there's COVID in the factory again. So we kind of went through this awful cycle. The Chinese way of dealing with COVID was quite different to ours. So things just stopped. Then Rick got COVID. Then once we were back up and running again, then they had all sorts of issues with electricity supply. So the factory actually wasn't running because there wasn't enough electricity to run it. So sort of Christmas time last year, I started to think, maybe this is just not meant to be. And then I got a call from Rick just before Christmas last year saying, I don't want to get your hopes up, but I think we might be on here. And of course, you've got to bear in mind that what I was asking for was one sample. I wasn't running a major run of anything. So, of course, I was down the bottom of the pile. But between Christmas and Chinese New Year, beginning of this year, we managed to get the sample out. And then once after Chinese New Year was over, we were kind of all systems go and we were up and running. And they finally arrived just before the summer.
That's amazing. That's really good timing, isn't it, as well, for like parents getting bags or kids going to secondary school. Oh wow, that's quite and well done for persevering as well, because that must have been so disheartening. Because as you say, if you were just after one sample, I can imagine that, you know, you were getting moved further and further down the queue as these bigger orders were coming in.
Yeah, and I think they had difficulties in getting the materials, you know, that all of those issues all kind of wrapped together, including the whole kind of shipping fee. At one point, Rick was ringing me going, actually, even if we do get the go ahead, you don't want to be shipping from China yet because the prices for a container have just gone through the roof. So it's been a real kind of balancing act. But sometimes I think I think it's a really good product. I think it's a really good idea. I think there are people out there, there've got to be people out there who are like me thinking, I really want my child to be much more visible. I've got to keep going. So that was all I did. You just got to keep putting one foot in front of the other and moving forward.
I think it's amazing that you kept going. And how were there any things that you were able to do to fill that time where you were waiting for new samples, for example?
So I did a lot of training courses, actually. So my background is in marketing and PR originally, but B2B sort of tech engineering stuff. And then more latterly, I'd worked in the family business. So a lot of the things that I'm doing now, I just had no clue about. So, you know, I've dealt with producing content for websites before, but I'd never built a website. I'd never taken photographs of products. I'd done a tiny bit of SEO, but only following somebody else's instructions, you know. So all of those things, actually, that time gave me the ability to spend it doing that. One of the things that happened quite early on was I got put in touch with the Coventry and Warwickshire Chamber of Commerce, who had a fantastic scheme going where they were able to give you some mentoring time and also some courses. So I used a lot of it to do that, and we just went on as many courses as I could do, and free trainings. And you know, a lot of these big players like Meta, Facebook, have a lot of training that you can do. And YouTube is a wonderful resource. If you don't know how to do something, how do I do whatever? And you can, you know, get yourself going from there. So a lot of the stuff that I've learned has been entirely self-taught. I've never used Instagram before I set up Footlets.
Oh, your Instagram's great. I think it's really good. As you say, a lot of these things do take time to learn. So I guess in a way it was, you don't want to say it was a good thing, but I suppose the silver lining to all that time you did have to wait was that you were able to put that time to really good use.
Because... And sometimes you don't know that until afterwards, do you? You can look back at it and you can think, oh, you know, I'm a big believer in all these things happen for a reason. You know, maybe it was just meant to be this way. You've just got to make the best of it. And I can't, you know, I can't do anything about the COVID situation in China. I can't do anything about rising prices. You know, I've just got to go with it. So that's what we did.
So the bags were ready this summer. So how have things gone from then?
Yeah, not too bad, thank you. Not too bad. It's now that the clocks have changed, it's made it much easier to film in the dark, because at one point in the summer we were having to stay up really, really late to try and get filming in the dark. But that's been another learning curve, actually, taking photographs, how to make little videos of things actually filming in the dark. So we've done a bit more of that. But yeah, everything's going fine, thank you.
Brilliant. And are your original testers, are they all using
they are now? Yeah, even my husband has got one. so I think that you know, the next, in terms of kind of product development, the next round will be actually looking kind of a year on, how have the bags stood up to the test, how could we make them better, what's the next iteration going to be. And, you know, we've got plenty of ideas in the pipeline. Once we get kind of up and running and we've got a, you know, a bit of bulk of funding behind us, there are other things that we could be doing. It's the more you talk to people, the more people say, oh, I'd really like a, you know, whatever. So, you know, that'll be kind of the next round of it. And starting to get some new advisors on board, because obviously my advisors are getting older every year. And, you know, I need some more who are kind of at the 11, 12s age, which is where my original intention was. So
that makes sense. And what are the, I meant to ask this earlier on, actually, what do the teenagers think about like the LED aspect and about lighting up and being really visible? Because you mentioned your daughter wasn't keen on like the reflective clothing or whatever. What do they feel about the bat? I'm just really curious.
They really liked it. They none of them have said, oh no, I don't like it. I think that what they do like is the fact that you can turn it on when you want it on. So you can, you know, take a few steps. You can wave goodbye to everyone at the bus stop, or you can wave goodbye to everyone at the school gate, take a few steps and then turn it on when you're ready for it. And I think they all understand, you know, they're all sensible kids and they're quite conscious of their own safety. Interestingly, the younger children, when I first did it, the thought of being lit up was delightful. They wanted to be lit up in as many colors as possible, with as many different flashing light combinations as possible. So there's obviously quite a change in attitude from moving from primary, where actually having lots of flashing lights in lots of different colors is really cool and really exciting, to secondary, where suddenly you know that there's a definite intent to grow up quite quickly. Which is one of the reasons why the bag is kind of grey, because the kids said it's a fairly kind of neutral colour. There's nothing that can really go wrong with it. I mean, I'd like to introduce more colours once we're sort of up and running a bit more. So, but yeah, they're all fine with it.
That all, you know, it makes total sense, because I've got a 6-year-old and a 9-year-old, and I would put money on the fact my 6-year-old would want to be lit up like a Christmas tree and my 9-year-old just wouldn't. But what I really like about your bags and what I've seen on your videos is they are lit up, but it's not garish, or it's not like a Christmas tree, for want of a better word. It's really, I don't want to say subtle, because it's really effective, because I've been watching your videos of your daughter, I believe it's your daughter's videos walking, and she's really, really visible, but it's not garish, or like, I don't know, I'm not a teenager, but I wouldn't have, what am I trying to say, I think it's really, really well done, because I can see that they might not want flashy lights and different colors and things like that.
I mean,
that,
I can remember back to being that age, and I just being very self-conscious and not wanting to stand out and not wanting any opportunities for people to go, oh, look at you know, that sort of thing. And I think that was one of the reasons why we tried to make it so once the lights are off, you can't really tell that there are lights on the bag. They're pretty invisible. They're encased in kind of a fairly thick piping. And that was one of the things that the kids had said. I don't want to wear a safety product. I don't want people thinking I'm a baby. I don't want anything that looks really obvious in the daytime. So that's kind of the end result of what we've tried to go for, is something that is useful and visible when you need it, rather than being kind of garish during the day.
That makes sense. And I think, yeah, I as we talk, I could just see how valuable it must have been for you to get all of that input from the teenagers, because you just can't get inside their heads, can you? There's nothing like actually finding out what they actually think.
No, and they come up with such hilarious things. I don't want a bag that's got massive branding on it. I really don't want a bag with massive branding on it. Okay, could you go and get your bag and show me what you've got at the moment? And I looked at his bag and it had got super dry all over the back of it. And I was like, it's branding, you know. So it is hard to get into their heads. But they've just been brilliant. In fact, one of the lads, Joshua, he made me a little video. He started off using his bag in September. And as the clocks changed, he said, right, I'm going to make a little video. And I'm just astounded by their tech ability. If you have a look on my Insta or my Facebook, it's on there. And he's just made this really, really slick video. He's cut various different bits of video together. He's done a voiceover commentary. And I just think, well done that man.
That's brilliant. And I guess that's also the kind of, it's kind of what you need to promote it as well, because I guess it's one of those products that because it's, I guess parents may not know it exists. I mean, until I heard about you, I had no idea that this was a thing. And I mentioned that when my son goes to secondary school, this is something I'll be thinking about. So I think it's one of those things where people are going to see a child with the bag, or parents are going to tell their friends, oh, my child uses this bag. So it's great that he's doing that for you and saying, this is my bag and I love using it and it makes me really visible.
Yeah. And that's one of the things that I'm finding quite interesting with the whole kind of marketing of it, is that it is something that people don't really know exists. People have a problem, but there isn't an obvious solution to search for necessarily. So it's not quite like, I don't know, launching a new cosmetics brand a scented candle or something like that, or a top or a pair of trousers where it's kind of obvious, I want some dark blue trousers and you can search for that. This is more of an interesting sell. So with my marketing head on, it's been quite kind of interesting looking at how do you sell a product into kids when they're actually not the ones who are buying it, it's their parents who are buying it, and the parents and the kids have got quite different ideas about how to be visible on the way home from school. Because as I said before, as an adult, it's really obvious, you just wear luminous stuff and you put lots of reflective panels on, and as a kid you're like, I'm not doing that.
That is a challenge. I think you're right that in a way it's nice to be selling something that's so unique, because if you were selling a top, for example, it's so hard to stand out amongst the millions of others. However, I guess it's hard because people, if they don't know your product exists, they might not necessarily be looking for it. So I guess that's where things like SEO, you know, really come into play, and thinking about what people are looking for.
And SEO, oh my word. That's a learning curve.
I think it all is, isn't it? But I think that is a challenge when you're selling something so unique, because if people don't know it exists, they might not necessarily be looking for it. So I guess it's trying to get into people's heads, isn't it? And thinking, what are people searching for? I mean, are they going into Google and searching, how do I make my child visible? I don't know what people are searching, but...
Oh, all sorts of things. So when you actually start to look, I mean, there's so much information out there that you can find on what people are searching for. But I think it's just a very slow burn of matching up and enabling Google to find you as a response to that kind of questioning. I suppose I just keep thinking, you just got to keep at it and show up every day. The more you do, the more Google will serve you up as a result. So, you know, the more I can do, the better. And somebody said to me the other day, oh, you need to be on TikTok. You need to be on TikTok. You need to get kids making loads of videos and be on TikTok. I'm thinking, blimey, I'm only just getting my head around Insta. I think TikTok might be the next step. So, you know, the socials are going to be really important.
Yeah, but I think I agree with you, though. I think this is my personal opinion, that actually you can spread yourself too thin, and it's probably better to get your head really around Facebook or Instagram or whatever it is, and then go, okay, that's kind of going well, and then moving on. Because I think it can be a really, really tempting in the beginning to be like, I have to be everywhere. But
yeah,
I think, yeah, when you spread yourself that thin, often you're not seen. That, you know, it's the opposite, isn't it? You're just not doing very well anymore.
Yeah, and that's, you're exactly right. That's exactly what I decided in the end, that I would just pick a couple of channels and I would try to do them really well. So I went for Facebook because I thought actually a lot of parents are on Facebook and a lot of grandparents are on Facebook. And I went for Insta because I felt that that was a slightly younger demographic, and that way I'd kind of got them both covered. And the fact that they're both connected makes it really easy to deal with. And I think, you know, do something and do it well, rather than spreading yourself too thinly. There's lots of talk of go on Twitter. You know, you could be on Twitter, and I'm thinking, well, I need to just do a couple and do them well, and then think really hard about what the next demographic is that I want to target. And maybe that will be TikTok. I don't know. But I think you've got to be able to create the content to keep the whole thing going, because there's nothing worse than going onto somebody's website, for example, or their Facebook feed, and seeing that the last blog post stroke photograph that was posted was from 6 months ago. It doesn't, you know, it doesn't make you look like you're, you know, taking it seriously. And you know, I just wanted to be sure that people knew that, you know, that this is really important to me. I'm really keen to make it work.
I think you're right. It just, especially when you're a brand that people haven't heard of, when they land on your website, you know, I feel like if I'm going to buy something from someone I haven't heard of, I want to feel like this is a legitimate business.
Yeah.
So, you know, you want to see like they are keeping, like you said, they're keeping their blog up to date and everything looks, yeah, it just wants to look current, because it's a bit nerve-wracking. You're putting your card details in somewhere and you've never heard of them before. I think you're right. And sort of, you're keeping everything up to your website, your social media, as you've said, it just kind of goes, I am in business and I'm taking this seriously.
Yeah,
it just gives off a much better impression, because I think if you go to a website and you can, like you say, you see it hasn't been updated for 6 months, I'd definitely think twice about, you know, tapping my card details in, for example.
And that has been, in some ways, that's been one of the hardest things, is that I'm actually selling me as well as the product, because I'm the face of the company. And, you know, but listening to yourself making little reels and all that sort of stuff is mortifying. You know, I'm not from the social media generation. I've really had to kind of get over my fear of doing these things. But I am a mum in Warwickshire who had a problem, who thought, I can't be the only one. I'm going to see if I can do something about it. So, you know, actually that's quite important to people, that that if they ring up, they get me. If they email, they get me. You know, we're not a faceless company with a call centre, you know, on the other side of the world. It's me.
I think your story also helps make it really relatable to people, because you say you are a parent, you did this to keep your child safe and other people's children safe. I think people can relate to that as well.
Yeah.
And it also gives you something to talk about. And I think it's brilliant that it's you talking in all your reels and that you're really visible. And actually, that's something I meant to ask at the beginning, but I completely forgot, is that when you had this, we'll call it a problem, and you were looking for solutions for your daughter, at what stage did you go, oh, actually, I might make a product and turn it into a business, as opposed to looking for something just for the situation you were in?
I think it probably sat there. The first time we had it was when my elder daughter started secondary. She's now about to take her GCSEs. So it's been a bit of a burn. And I think it sat there for a couple of years. I wasn't really in a position where I could do anything about it. And then my position changed. I'd stopped working for the family business, and I thought, what am I going to do now? What do I want to do? And I think the little gem of an idea that I'd had, that had obviously been kind of percolating away in the background, kind of came to the fore. And I thought, you know what? I'm going to give it a go. Which was sort of a pretty brave thing when I look back on it. It just seemed quite obvious at the time. Do you know what? I've had this idea. I think I've got a few contacts that I can ring. I will see if I can make something of it. And actually, that was something that I was going to say to anybody else who's sort of in this position where they've had a bit of an idea and thought, I wonder if I could. Whether you know it or not, you've got a massive network out there. And it not in the kind of sense of an old boys network of, you know, terribly fancy people. But you, when you start to think about it, you know all sorts of people. I've got a friend who's worked in product manufacturing. So I rang her. I've got a friend who was an electronic engineer, so I rang him. And the more people that I talked to, the more I found out. And people are so kind. People are really rooting for you and really willing to help you. So my husband, for example, spoke to one of his colleagues at work and said, oh, look, we're thinking of doing this. Have you got any advice? And she said, well, do you know what? My child's just about getting to the age of secondary school. If you give me a bit of a talk about how you apply for secondary schools and how the process works, I'll put you in touch with so-and-so. So there was a bit of a sort of a quid pro quo. And then even people that I didn't know, when I was in the research stage, my original plan was I really wanted the bags to be made in the UK, and for various reasons that wasn't possible. But I rang a bag manufacturer in the UK, up in Wrexham, I think they are. And I left a message, and the managing director rang me back. And he spent a good half an hour on the phone after he'd said, I don't think we can help you, and this is why, giving me advice, talking me through things that were important, talking me through things that I should really sort of consider, how the bag was manufactured, how I was going to get it off the ground. Now, he didn't have to do that. He was just a really nice bloke who thought, yeah, okay, I'm going to give you some advice. There have been people who I haven't spoken to in years on my Facebook who have shared my posts, who have sent it out to their friends saying, oh, this is a lady I used to work with. She set up this business. Don't you think it's a great idea? You know, so actually everybody does have a network of people. Even if you haven't worked at the top flight of business and you know, you haven't been a fashion director of a major brand, we've all got people out there who will help us. And sometimes if you believe in what you're doing and you talk to people about it, they really will help you.
People are nice, aren't they?
They are.
I like hearing stories like that. And I think you're right. And also, I think it's worth remembering that the worst that can happen is someone says no, or I don't have time right now.
Yeah,
most people don't, but that's the very, very worst that can happen. And I'm with you. I think that reaching out and asking people, can you help me? Do you know someone who can help me? It just beats spending hours trawling YouTube or whatever it is.
Yes.
You can find a person that can help you. And you're right, most of us are better connected than we think we are. We might think we don't know anybody, but when you start talking... I had something last year actually where I was at a kid's birthday party and a lady was talking to her friend and she was saying, oh, well, I want to start selling my products. I'm not really sure what to do and I don't know who to ask. And I sort of had to put my hand up and go, I can help you with that.
Yeah.
And it's really funny. We were just standing a meter away from each other and she had no idea what I was doing. And I had no idea what she was doing, but it turned out we could really help each other. So
yeah, people have been absolutely fabulous. And it is a small world and people are really willing. You've just got to ask, and people do want it to work. And the number of people that have said to me, I think it's a pants idea and it's not going to come off and you'll never manage it, is zero. Because actually everybody's gone. There are a couple of people that I've spoken to who I can tell have thought, not really sure about that. But that's fine. I'm not trying to sell it to everybody. There is a market out there of people who need this. And that's who I want to talk to.
And sometimes I think that says more about those people than it does about you as well, if you know what I mean. Plus, as you've just said, it's your product is not going to be for everyone. And that's advice I give people all the time. Like an example I give loads is that if you were creating something for new mums and your granddad didn't like it, well, no disrespect, but actually, does that really matter? Probably not. So, and equally, you know, if you were making something for pensioners, you wouldn't really be that worried if your teenager didn't like it. So I think knowing who you, and it sounds like you've been so clear about knowing who you're selling your product to, who it's for, that, yeah, that I think that's really, really helpful, because then, you know, sort of know whose advice to take on board and who you can go, well, thank you, I respect your opinion, but actually,
yeah,
you know, I'll put that to one side and won't worry about that.
Yeah, and I think you do have to have that ability sometimes. It's quite easy, particularly when you are a woman and you've got to the, I'm mid-40s, you've got to the age that I am, you it's easy to kind of lose your confidence a bit, especially if you've been out of the kind of mainstream job world for a while through children or whatever, and get a bit kind of buffeted by other people's opinions of what you should do and how you should do it. Well, I've decided, it's not to say that I won't change my mind, but for the time being, I'm going to concentrate on doing this and this. I'm going to do my Facebook, I'm going to do my Instagram, and this is the way I want it to be. You know, that's the joy of running your own business, isn't it? It is your own business and you can do it the way you want to.
And good for you as well. And also, as you said, you've also, this is also something that's totally new for you. So I also think it's great that you had the confidence to go, do you know what? I might not know exactly what I'm doing, but I'll figure it out and I'll do it my way. You possibly don't realise, Laura, how much confidence you've got. And how much it's probably given you as well.
That's really kind of you.
No, I mean, it's probably given you a lot as well, because I think when we prove to ourselves, actually, I can do this, it kind of, I think it impacts other parts of your life as well. When you go, oh, actually, I have built a business, or I have, you know, created this product. I honestly think that has a knock-on effect.
Yeah. Oh, well, you know, anybody who's out there who's thinking about it, do it. Just have a go. And as you say, what is the worst that can happen? The worst that can happen is nobody buys them. And really, is that the end of the world? No. You know, there are a lot worse things that could happen. Look at Ukraine, you know.
Yeah. And I also will say that when you put in the amount of work you've done on researching, I actually think it's fairly unlikely that nobody will buy it. And I'm so big, I mentioned I recorded something about this yesterday, because I'm so big on people doing the research, because I do honestly think that if you do the research and you take lots of time and you speak to the right people, obviously you speak to the right people and you find out what they want and you find out, you know, what they're after, you are so much more likely to create something that people do want to buy. I think that just, it doesn't take the risk away entirely, but it massively reduces it, because you've made the best, it sounds like to me that you have made the best bag that you could at this stage.
Yeah.
By speaking to the people who want it. And so I think it's really unlikely that it's not going to sell because of all that work you've put in up front. And yeah, I know it's hard and I know it takes time, but I'm such a massive fan of actually doing that work.
Yeah. And I think it will stand me in good stead. And maybe looking back on it, that was an advantage of the whole COVID situation, where things were at a bit of a standstill, that I had lots of time available. When I wasn't trying to help my younger daughter get through her primary school lockdown homework. But, you know, that time I don't think can ever be badly spent, because I just kept looking at different options and researching, and you've got, you know, that's a luxury, that time to be able to put it in. And, you know, it's not to say that there won't be iterations of the product in the future, because obviously the more people use it, the more feedback you get, the more there will be common threads of things that you think, yeah, I could do something about that. Or I had no idea that that was what they wanted, but several people have asked for that. How can I incorporate that into the next version going forward?
That makes sense. And also what you said, I really liked earlier about, you know, when people have been using the bag for a year, are there things that a year on aren't working as they should or whatever? That really stood out to me when you said that, because I've never heard anyone say that before. It sounds really silly, but I spoke to so many people, I don't recall anyone saying that, but it is such a good point. With a product like yours, it should last.
Yeah.
I don't know how long it should, but it should last. Let's say it's not something you're going to buy new every 6 months or every year necessarily. No. I think it's a really good point to say, actually, let's see what they look like after a year of use, and, you know, have they held up, are they durable enough?
Yeah.
I really like like that you said that. That really stuck with me.
Yeah. And I would like to be able to make them more environmentally friendly as we go on. So are there materials that we can make them out of that would be, durable enough? They would have the waterproof, sort of the water resistant capabilities that they've got. But perhaps could be, I don't know, made out of recycled PET bottles or something like that. You know, I look at my daughter's blazers and they are made out of recycled PET blazers, bottles. Could we do something like that? But I think there's a danger, and I had to stop myself at one point from trying to make it perfect before it launched. Actually, I needed to get it to a point where I thought, not that this is good enough, this is fab, I've made something good. Yes, I might be able to make it even better in the future, but I think if you're on a search for perfection from the start, you're never going to get anywhere, because what's perfection? Perfection to one user is one thing, perfection to somebody else is something different, you know.
I think you're right. I really like that saying, done is better than perfect. And I'm not saying that, not for this, but I think there are lots of instances where actually it's, things don't have to be perfect. They can be good enough, not maybe the sense of a product, but also I think that can be a form of procrastination as well. You spend so long designing and refining and tweaking that you just delay launching your product.
Yeah.
You know, it goes pushed further and further back. And I do think, I don't know if it's a bit of fear or what it is, but I see this a lot where people go, oh, I'm just going to go through one more round of sampling, or I'm just going to go through one more round of whatever it is. And it just gets delayed and delayed and delayed. So I think you do have to come to a point where you have to go, yep, they're going to put it out there, see what people think.
Yeah.
And then even if it doesn't sell well enough, that also tells you something. And then you can go, okay, why? What is it that aren't appealing to people or whatever it is? And you can improve. And as you say, even if it does sell really well, there still will be things that you want to do that your customers tell you they want. There's always room for new, evolution is the right word, but.
Well, it's sort of new iterations, isn't it? Yeah. And, you know, you can, there are plenty of ways that we can kind of take the kind of classic bag that we've produced and either produce a slightly newer version or a smaller version, or a slightly different product for a slightly different market. You know, maybe there are sort of year six kids out there who really are starting to walk to school on their own, perhaps being able to walk from a drop-off point, their parents are getting them ready to go. Maybe they want something slightly different. They don't have to carry the vast quantity of books or a device in the same way that secondary school kids do. So there's plenty of options for kind of building the business up.
It's really exciting.
Yeah.
So thank you so much for all that you shared, Laura. I've taken a lot from it, and I hope that everyone else is as well. I have one final question before we wrap up, if that's okay.
Yeah.
Which is, what is your number one piece of advice for other product creators? I know it's a big
question. I think it really would be ask for help. And the more you ask, the more you will find out. There are people out there who will help you. Don't try and do it on your own. Ring people up and ask them, even if you don't know them, because the response that I had was fantastic. And yeah, you're right, sometimes people will go, no, I'm too busy to help you, or they won't get back to you. Well, that gives you your answer. But there will be people out there who've got the information that you need, and they will help you.
Oh, thank you so much, Laura.
Oh, it's been really nice to talk to you. Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening right to the end of this episode. Do remember that you can get the full back catalogue and lots of free resources on my website, vickyweinberg.com. Please do remember to rate and review this episode if you've enjoyed it, and also share it with a friend who you think might find it useful. Thank you again, and see you next week. If you've been inspired to start a podcast in 2024, I really recommend my podcast host, Captivate. Captivate were my top pick when I started podcasting 4 years ago because of how easy it was for a complete novice like me to get started. I've stuck with them for the last 4 years because Captivate is still really simple to use. They keep adding great new features like the ability to share ads like these, and they've just been really reliable. So when you're ready to start your own podcast, you can use the link in the show notes and get a free 7-day trial with Captivate.